Okay, I'm all in.
This is the only poker show in St. Louis radio.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
With the only St. Louisan to make it to the final table of the 2008 World Series of Poker main event.
Shuffle up a deal.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
And welcome to downtown St. Louis in the Lumiere Place Poker Room. I am Paul Harris alongside Team Poker Stars Pro Dennis Phillips. And before we get to poker or anything else, may I just say thank you to the Missouri Department of Transportation for opening up Highway 40 more than 3 weeks early. This was a construction project that had closed down the biggest artery in our area for almost 2 years and made my life a commuting hell for 2 years coming down here. But now it's open, and I was able to zoom right down here. It's a straight shot. They opened it up. Yesterday was the first day, and it is truly a pleasure.
Zoom is an interesting thing because they had it on the news yesterday, and the first bit of news I have, they flash it up there. 40 is open, and behind him, I see a police car with flashers going on. They'd stop somebody for speeding on it already. It's open, and by the way, here's our first ticket.
Yeah, don't get overzealous if you're driving just because the highway is open. All right, let me promote what's coming up on the show today. Joe, the poker coach McGowan, will join us in a few minutes. We've got a listener who sent in a hand that he played in the main event this summer that he wants some analysis from Joe and from you on. So we're going to get to that. And then after that, Darvin Moon,
yes,
the logger from Western Maryland turned multimillionaire who won $5 million-plus as the runner-up in this year's World Series of Poker main event. Another one of those unlikely finishes. Not bad for a guy who got in there on a small satellite in Wheeling, West Virginia, which is not far from where he lives in Western Maryland. And Darvin has had quite a couple of weeks. You've been talking to him on a regular basis?
Uh-huh, I have been. It's kind of nice to talk to somebody who qualified on a smaller satellite, went out there, became the chip leader, and had a good run at the final table.
Very much like you.
It does sound like it.
Yeah.
He's a good, good guy.
So we're going to talk with Darvin a little bit later on in the show. And before we get to any other real poker stuff, you have had a busy few days. I know you were in L.A., you were in Las Vegas, then you came back here, and you went to a big charity event on Saturday night.
I absolutely did. It was my pleasure to go to it. The Pujols Family Foundation had their year-end wrap-up here at the Chase. Unbelievable lineup of people that showed up there to honor Albert and Dee Dee and thank them for what they've done. I met some people I'd never, Lou Brock was there, Mike Matheny was there, Daryl Strawberry was there, all the guys like I met some of them last year. And Metal Arc Lemon was there.
From the Harlem Globetrotters.
I had never met him before. It was just flat out awesome. I couldn't believe it. It's like, wow.
Well, you know, that was the heyday for me. Yep. Of the Harlem Globetrotters, Metal Arc Lemon and Curly Neal.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But he's there. He's just, you know, wisecracking, having fun the whole bit. It looked like he still could take a hook shot from half court and make it. So, you know, I had a great time there. And, oh, I got to tell you one thing that happened there. It was just absolutely phenomenal. Leading up to it, they gave a recap of the year, and they had a gentleman from the Dominican that came up there and talked about the programs that are going there, which are just flat-out awesome, some of the things he does. If you guys don't know about this foundation, you ought to check it out because they do some great work.
Albert does plenty of stuff for his people in his homeland in the Dominican Republic, and also to help out kids here.
Correct.
Is it just with Down syndrome?
That's where their concentration is at, yes, because that's kind of a neglected one in that. The mother of somebody who had benefited from some of the items they did got up there and stood in front of it, and she apologized ahead of time. She says, I may burst into tears, but this is what I feel. And she had us all just literally awestruck because she started out and she said, first of all, I am so blessed each day to have had this daughter. She's the greatest thing in my life, and you all ought to be jealous of me.
Wow.
And she went on to say, my daughter gets up every morning with a smile on her face. She doesn't have a mean bone in her body. Everything is excitement and great, and she enjoys it. She is just truly happy every day of her life. Mm. And she makes my life so much better because of it. Mm-hmm. And she went on to talk to her, and she just literally, you know, floored us. I was so impressed by that. At the end of it, at the very end of this, and I'll tie these together in just a second, they had five different packages that were going to auction off. Mm-hmm. Except that when Rennie Knox came up there to do it, he says, we now have six packages to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, whatever on that. Tony La Russa walks off from the side of the stage. Nobody knew he was there except for Randy and a couple of people, I'm sure. Albert didn't know it. He's sitting right there and looks up and looks like, what the heck is going on now?
Yeah.
You can just see this look on his face. It was a little bit of terror. It's sort of like, you know, what's going on here?
The boss is here.
Yeah, there we go. He offered something they said they'd never offered before, and once the Cardinals find out about it, they'll probably never be able to offer again.
Wow.
You get to what they auctioned off was the chance to be the coach of the Cardinals for the day. Literally.
You mean you take Tony's place as the manager of the St. Louis Cardinals?
Every way. You meet in the morning with the different coaches. You can meet with Akendo. You can meet with McGuire. Talk about hitting strategy. You set the lineup. He did recommend you bat number five third, but, you know, it's your choice. Okay. You set up the whole battery. You decide the whole thing. You do the substituting. You're the one that walks out with the lineup card to it. The whole thing. I mean, that would be just, you sit in there with a uniform on in the dugout for the whole game.
I think I would want this just so I could go out and argue a call with an umpire, turn my hat backwards, get right in their face.
Oh, and kick dirt on the home plate or something like that. You know,
give him a little Whitey Herzog, nose to nose.
Okay, I can't see you doing that, Paul, no offense. But it was awesome, right? All right. Well, anyhow, the bidding's going on, and I tried to get into the bidding on it. Gentleman from the White Sox, from St. Charles, I believe, down here, Mark Burley.
The Chicago White Sox.
Chicago White Sox.
Yep. Guy who threw
the no-hitter last year.
This year.
Yeah, there you go. He was down there, too, as a lot of other professional players were, and he was bidding on it, and he got the bid, and it was a substantial amount for the bid.
Mm-hmm.
Stood up, walked over to the woman that had given the little speech and said, it's for you and your daughter.
Are you kidding me?
Not at all.
So now the woman and her daughter with Down syndrome.
Yeah, so we set it all up. We're flying them first class. To the game, we're setting up in a hotel room.
Oh, it's not a home game here in St. Louis?
No, it's going to be a preseason game. I'm sorry, I should have said
that. So they'll go down to Jupiter, Florida.
They're going down to Jupiter, Florida. They're going to take care of it.
Play at Roger Dean Stadium.
There you go.
And will the girl get to wear a uniform?
Yes, she will.
Oh,
the whole bit.
God, that's fantastic.
It was just unbelievable. My hat's off to him. That was such a fantastic gift. He said he might be occupied the day in another game, so that he had to have a substitute, and if you'd be so kind, would you take my place? Unbelievable.
Wow.
Yeah, it was. It was pretty awesome. I'll have to admit that. The whole night was just, it just kind of rose you up and made you feel good about yourself.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful. Albert does such phenomenal work
with that.
And I know you and he have become friends, and you've been helping him out with the foundation and doing lots of charitable stuff for him. Mm-hmm. Did you bid on anything? Did you?
Oh, my gosh, yes, I did.
You always do.
I know. I have.
But you always come up with cool stuff. What was it this time?
Well, they had a sort of like a shadow box set up for a wall mount. It was in the shape of a home plate, except a little larger than that. And there were 11 slots in it, one for each of the nine positions, and one for a designated hitter, and one for a coach.
Yep.
And they had a baseball sitting on each of these 11 little slots.
Uh-huh.
And they might be a couple of names you would recognize.
They were autographed?
Autographed.
Okay.
Individual.
Well, I'm guessing Tony La Russa was the manager.
Well, yeah. Nine of the 11 are already in the Hall of Fame. The two that are not are Tony as a coach.
Uh-huh.
And there's another gentleman that plays first base and is sort of well-known.
Albert was there?
There you go.
Okay. All right.
The other nine are all already in the Hall of Fame.
So this is not all current players, obviously, even recent players. These are all-timers.
These are all-timers, yes. On it.
Name some names.
All right. Let's just start with the battery. We had Bob Gibson and Yogi Berra.
Okay.
Yogi Berra, you know, the man of a dozen rings, you know, the whole bit like that on it. He didn't do too bad.
Yeah.
There was just a few MVPs scattered out through the rest of it, too. You go with Rod Carew at second base, and I know he finished the season first and everything like that, but he knew how to swing a bat just a little bit. A guy by the name of Cal Ripken Jr. at short. Again, you know, just a couple of hits in his career and everything like that on it. Mike Schmidt at third base.
Mm-hmm.
Not too bad there.
Yeah.
Now listen to this outfield.
Okay.
Stan Musial. Joe DiMaggio, Ted Williams.
Wow. Wait, where's Hank Aaron?
Designated hitter.
I was kidding.
No.
I figured they just put together the best guys they could get autographs from, you know, in history.
Uh-huh.
And that DiMaggio one's got to be a few years old.
Obviously.
Some of these have got to be several years old. Ted
Williams
not around
anymore. Ted's not
signing
anything anymore.
Ted's head isn't signing anything anymore. It's frozen. So wow. That's unbelievable.
It is. And it's a great-looking setup and the whole bit. And it's, baseball. And these are personalized and with little notes about Hall of Fame or number of hits or something. It's pretty awesome.
That's a nice thing for whoever donated it to donate.
Correct.
And for you to bid on, because the money's going to go to
Absolutely.
The Pujols Family
Foundation.
I mean,
the things they do, they were buying mattresses for homes down there. They were buying glasses. They took dental people down there, flew them to the Dominican, and were fixing the teeth on some of these people. And it just it's stuff that never gets done because they don't go to the normal one. They go to the poorest of the poor in there. The people that never see a doctor in their entire life and go in there with some help.
That's phenomenal.
It is.
Work.
It's pretty phenomenal.
Congratulations to all of them. We are at the Lumiere Place final table in downtown St. Louis. Reminder that we've got Darvin Moon coming up later on this hour. Before we take a break, though, this weekend upcoming will be another PokerStars.net Million Dollar Challenge weekend.
Yep.
It's going to be Sunday at 2 o'clock here in St. Louis because the Rams have the 3 o'clock game. So that show is going to air from 2 to 3 this Sunday on Fox Channel 2 here in town. And I understand that they got Joe Cada involved.
Yes.
I don't know if it's in this weekend or the one that airs later on in the month. Do you?
I don't know which one it's at. I was actually out there in L.A. last week when we were shooting it with Daniel, with Joe, and the rest of them, Vanessa and all of them. Mm-hmm. I got to sit in the audience and watch it, talk to the people, talk to a number of the players, the people that played. It's pretty awesome.
Were you there when this unbelievably hot model got to play, Joanna Krupa?
I was not. I can't believe that I was not.
I've never heard of her before. She apparently was on Dancing with the Stars, but she got called in to be like in that first slot.
Correct.
Where a player has to get by them to win the initial thing and then go on to play a pro and then go on to play Daniel for the chance to go on for the million dollars, which will happen later on this month, right?
Correct. They will.
So before the end of the year, they'll do that. But a reminder that that'll be on Tuesday, 2 o'clock St. Louis time. Also, they have just started the season finale of Poker After Dark on NBC with a two-week run of a high-stakes cash game with Patrick Antonius, Daniel Negreanu, Gus Hansen, Phil Ivey, Durr, Tom Dwan, and Phil Hellmuth. Now, I know you were, when you were out in Vegas a few weeks ago for high-stakes poker, you got called in as an emergency to go in for somebody who had stomped off the set, whose name we're not giving, but I think everybody knows who that would be. And you got called in and you had to play a little bit for a couple of hours. Was this the session that you were involved in?
Actually, it was not. This was for next season.
The one that you did was next season?
Correct. And it starts the middle of February, like the 14th is the first day of it. And it shows for about 12 episodes on it. So
That's what they're doing here. It's the last 2 weeks of the fifth season that are airing right now. And one last poker TV, or two last poker TV things. Vanessa Russo, your fellow Team Poker Stars pro. Her show, Bank of Hollywood, a reality show produced by Ryan Seacrest, will be on the E! Channel next Monday. Mm-hmm. We're going to have Vanessa on with us in a couple of weeks to talk about that. And on The Amazing Race this past Sunday, the one where we had been talking to Tiffany Michelle and Maria Ho, they finished sixth in that whole thing, and they'd been giving us updates on this show about that. Poker played a part in the last episode of that, where the three remaining teams had to go to Las Vegas. They had to rappel down the side of Mandalay Bay's tall tower, and then they had to get to the Monte Carlo, go into the poker room there, and count out $1 million in poker chips. Now, I said to my wife as we're watching this, this would be easy for me because I know the denominations. $5 is red, $25 is green, $100 is black, and up and up and up and up. Mm-hmm. I would have been completely screwed, Dennis. They changed the denominations. $1,000 chips were red.
Not yellow?
No, not yellow.
Oh.
So I would have been looking, don't pick up the red. Those are the $5 chips.
Yeah.
No, the red chips were the most valuable ones there, the $1,000. Anyway, Megan and Shane finished that task first, and they went on to win the Amazing Race this weekend. All right, let's take a break. Joe, the poker coach McGowan, is standing by to do some analysis of a great hand that a listener played during the main event this past summer and wants to get your opinion and Joe's opinion on. So we'll do that when we come back here at the Lumiere Place Final Table. This portion of the show is brought to you by Poker Stars.
Yeah, Poker Stars, it's the side I play on. And it's, I'll tell you right now, they've got something new coming on Poker Stars. They have a Play the Pros. It's on every Tuesday afternoon and evening. I will be playing it, so will, of course, the lineup from PokerStars, which is unbelievable. You have Joe Hashem, you have Chris Moneymaker, you have Greg Raymer, you have Peter Eastgate, you have the new champ down there, Joe Cotta. All of these are World Series of Poker champions. They're all going to be playing with Barry, Daniel, and Vanessa on it. If you want to go on there and play with the pros and play with these guys, go to PokerStars.net, sign up, get proficient at the game, and sit down at the table with us.
If you want a link to PokerStars, you can always go to the sponsors section of Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. This is the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
It's a winter wonderland at Lumiere Place this December 1st through the 24th. And while the winds may be howling outside, things are heating up with $125,000 in instant cash and prizes inside. It's as easy as playing the games you love, including exciting new slots and the city's best table games. Earn 100 points each day and win an instant prize. Limit one per player per day. Start playing December 1st at 8 a.m. and play every day through December 24th at 11:59 p.m. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
Tuesday is Poker Day on 590 The Fan KFNS. So here are Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris, live from downtown St. Louis at the Lumiere Place Final Table.
And we are joined now by the poker coach, Joe McGowan. How are you this afternoon, Joe?
I'm doing well, Paul. How are you?
Doing just great. I have a great email here from a listener named Matt Turk in Illinois, who played in the main event of the World Series of Poker this past summer. And Dennis, he was wearing a red Cardinals hat like you. He says he didn't cash, but he made it to day three, and he was happy with that. It's his first 10K event. And he wants your opinion, both of you, on a hand he played on day three. It was level 11. The blinds were 800 and 1600 with a 200 ante. The table had been playing mostly tight with a few active players, no big-name pros. He had just doubled up to around 50,000 in chips. Chip average was about 90,000 at the time. He said, the best hand I'd gotten in hours was ace five. I hadn't played a hand at this level. When it was folded around to me on the button, I looked down at ace of hearts, jack of hearts. I raised to 4,000, about 2.5 times the big blind. The small blind folded. The big blind, who was an aggressive European player, re-raised to 12,000. Now, he had me covered. I had 50. He had 80,000 in chips. There's now 17,800 in the pot. It only cost me 8,000 to call. I had seen this player re-raise another raiser from the small blind in an earlier orbit and then show a total bluff. Also, I was going to have position all the way through here, so I decided to call. I did think about moving in pre-flop, but if he does have a total bluff, he's just going to fold, and I want to get some value out of the hand. I put him on a range of suited connectors down to 6-7, all the way up to ace-king, maybe small pairs, who knows, maybe even aces. So he called, and they went to the flop. Now, I want to go through this street by street with you guys. Joe, starting with you, what do you think of his play so far?
Well, you know, the ace-jack on the button, you know, it's definitely a raising hand. You're not going to throw it away, so you need to raise. And I wouldn't suggest to limp. I mean, you could, but you're going to raise, but I think the common trend nowadays, and Dennis, you're probably very familiar with this, is the 2.5 times or so raise. The problem is on day three, and I don't remember if you said there were antes, but there were definitely antes.
Yep. Yep.
So, you know, with the antes that are in there, you know, there's when he makes it $4,000, you know, if an aggressive player closes the betting in the big blind with the antes, the small blind, dead money in there, I mean, you're looking at a very small amount of chips to call with any two cards. So for me, the big blind is either going to call or raise me when I make it 2.5 times, if it's an aggressive, good player with chips. So I don't really love the size of the raise there. Now, you do want to maybe keep things consistent, but not really in poker. I mean, you don't have to always be 2.5 times, you know, 2.5 times, 2.5 times, or 3 times, or 4 times. And I will raise 2.5 times many times. If I'm on a table where there's passive players and I want to see tons of flops for cheap, I'll raise 2.5 times if they're folding a lot to me. That way I get a lot of chips cheap. But in that spot, you know, you can mix it up. You know, you could raise 4 times. Tell the guy I have a hand. And get in more information. You're raising to get information also. So by just the 2.5, I think you're giving the guy way too good of a price to either play back at you and you don't know where you are, or to just call and then outplay you if he's a good player. So I would have raised a little bit more. Also, you know, there's been many times where I see in the corner of my eye the guy hasn't acted yet, but he's got a huge hand. I might make a ridiculous overbet because I have two aces, and I know he's going to call me, and he has queens, and he thinks he's good. So you can do 2.5 anywhere to all in, and I think it's okay. But, you know, so far that's what I'm thinking. Well, Dennis, what do you think?
No, absolutely on that. The math is there. That's the first thing that jumped out to me. With 8 and 16 and a 200 ante, you got $4,000 sitting out there already, and you're raising it to the 4,000. The guy in the big blind is a $2,400 call. I mean, if he's sitting right there, you know, with better than 3-1, it's almost any two cards that he can call and see a flop, see three cards. He has to have a deuce seven or whatever to fold there. So you're not putting any pressure on him with that. Joe's idea is right and to the point.
He has everything going, right, Dennis? I mean, he closes the betting. It's a button race, and all the gravy out there. You know, I mean, everything in the world is out there for the guy to either call or re-raise you, and you really have you don't really have much information because it's such a small
raise. The guy here is saying, I put him on this range, and he's got a ton of hands here. He hasn't narrowed the range down at all. I'm telling you right there, I would be calling with literally almost any two suited cards, any two high cards, any time connected cards. Yeah,
if I have the chips, I'm calling probably, honestly, with even seven deuce just to try to get lucky for the implied odds.
Okay, you know, mental note. So Joe will play ace, seven, deuce. Okay.
All right, let me get to the...
No, you're right.
Let me get to the flop here. After he calls, the flop comes down. Ace, queen, nine, rainbow. Our hero here leads out for 10,000. I'm sorry, no, the other guy, the big blind, leads out for 10,000 into a 25,800 pot. He says, I had 38,000 behind me at this point, so it's decision time. I had top pair, so obviously I'm not folding. My stack-to-pot ratio is 2-1. Given my chip stack, I really should move in here. But I decided to just call to see what he did on the turn. My gut feeling is that he would check most turns there, and then I would move in and take it down. So I just called the 10,000. What do you think of that play, Joe?
Well, I think actually the call, you know, when he was raised pre-flop is really where he got in trouble. I think right then and there you say to yourself, okay, I just got re-raised. Aggressive players, bad players wake up to hands too. I have ace-jack. I can't beat any pocket pair. You know, I'm in horrible shape against some of them. And I can beat ace-rag. You know, and I only have 4,000 in the pot. I have no idea where I'm at. This guy's an aggressive player. You know, if I just call, maybe he'll outplay me. Maybe he'll outflop me. I feel like you're cry calling. You're in a bad spot. You really don't know where you are. It may sound tightish, but I would let it go. I'd rather wait until I get another situation against a bad player that's easy for me to read where I have a good hand. You know, I would probably fold on the pre-flop. So the after the flop, you know, now he's in big trouble. He called, he hits his hand, but he's still not sure where he is. You know, this is a classic example of, you know, playing. It's a good hand, but it just went south early, and I would have probably folded the pre-flop. Once I was re-raised, not liking it, you know, I'd be upset, but I'd probably have to let it go.
Dennis, what do you think of the call on the flop?
I think he should have thought a step or two further like Joe is doing right here. You know this is an aggressive player who's going to make a continuation. What would you have to have on this flop to feel comfortable? Do you have to have an ace-jack? Do you have to flop a set with jack-jack? Do you have to have whatever, three to whatever you suit your ace was in? I mean, there's a limited number of ones that you can feel comfortable with. Yeah. There's an awful lot of them you can feel scared with.
Yep.
What if it comes jack high out there?
Yeah.
Guy might have queens. What if it comes, who knows what type deal? Ace and two rags. What if it comes three hearts out there and you don't have a heart? What if it comes? I can name a dozen of them.
Sure.
That are scary flops on this thing. Ace jack is a difficult hand to play. I will give him that he had the close of the bidding. I will give him that he had position on the guy after the flop. I'll give him a lot of things on this. But if you know this guy's going to make a continuation, you're not calling the 8,000 there. You're risking your whole tournament.
Okay.
Because he's talking about like about 2.2-1 and I have to make the call and everything. Well, in a cash game, you do.
Okay, so what do you do here in this situation when the guy leads out for 10,000? You have ace-jack. There's an ace on the board. You got ace-queen-9. It's rainbow. So what do? Do you lay it down there?
That's just it. Now you're trapped. Now you're in trouble.
Yeah, exactly.
Now you've got a pot out here of 25,000, 35,000 in the pot with a raise on it. That's all you've got left on it. If this is an aggressive player, he could be pushing with a draw. He could be pushing with kings, queens. He could be doing a lot of things. He could be pushing with an ace and a lower one maybe even. You're trapped. Honest to God,
everything happened against
boom.
This guy. You know, because he made the call pre-flop. Now the pot has all that money out there, and compared to his stack, he really wants to win it. Now he's in really bad shape. Yeah,
he
could have been good. You know, I understand he could have been good, but he's getting more looks. But this guy keeps showing strength. You know, he raises and then does a small, continuation possible bet, but that's either extreme weakness or extreme strength typically.
Yeah.
You know, when a player does that, it's very fishy, and you don't like it.
All right. So so he calls the flop, and the turn is a 10, a 10 of clubs, putting two clubs out there. He says this is a great card for me because now I have an open-ended straight draw because it's ace, queen, jack, nine, and ace, queen, 10, nine on the board, and he's got ace, jack. He says, I've got a top pair and an open-ended straight draw. I could have as many as 11 outs. The problem now is there are two clubs on the board, and if he had been making these moves with 10s, now he's got a set, and so I'm in trouble here. But I figure I have no choice here but to move all in. So I do. And he takes 3 minutes and finally calls, and he turns over one of the worst hands I could have seen, the ace, king of clubs. Top pair, top kicker.
And the flush draw.
And the flush draw.
Yeah.
I wondered why it took him so long. And to add insult to injury, the river was another ace, given us both trips, but his king kicker played. Did I just take a cooler here? Should I have folded this pre-flop? Did I botch it really badly, et cetera? Well, we've already answered the question about should you have folded a pre-flop, but what do you think about his play after those first couple of mistakes? Now he gets to the turn, and there's that 10 of clubs. How huge a mistake is it to shove all his stack in there?
Well, I think, you know, when you said it was a good, he thought it was a good card for him. I think it's a horrible card for him. You know, any of the real aces that raise, now they all beat you. Ace king already had you beat. Ace queen had you beat and flop two pair. Ace jack is the same hand. Now ace 10 beat you. You said there was a nine on the flop, I believe. Now ace nine even beat you.
Yeah.
Can't beat anything. So, you know, it gives you a straight draw with one card to come, but, I mean, that's not that great. I'd rather have a blank and still be able to beat ace 10. That was the only hand I'm praying the guy had if he was raising me with somewhat of a real hand. If he's bluffing, I got him beat. But if he has anything that's real, I lose to all of them now. So, you know, I think also when you said that you know, he was surprised it took so long for him to call. Okay, his image was this guy was an aggressive player. Well, good players that are even aggressive, the range that they can raise and move you off and play with is real wide. But when it comes to them calling all of their chips or a lot of their chips or a big, big pot in their tournament life, believe me, they're not going to, you know, they're going to put some thought into it. You have to have a hand to be able to call. So that's where maybe this sounds like this emailer that sent into the show has a lot of potential. I mean, really thinks about the hands and, you know, is a real student of the game. But I think they need to couple a little bit more of kind of the old-fashioned, you know, old school, you know, I don't think he's got anything, you know what I mean? Just that feel of the game. And I think work that into his game a little bit more and a little bit more of the read. You know, so far I haven't heard anything of, you know, he looked like this or
correct.
My read was this. It's all more of like a online analysis, which is great and super helpful, and I need to get better at that. So, you know, my hat's off to him for that, but I think he just needs a little more roundedness to his game to really end up helping him for the long run.
Well, Matt, thank you very much for the email. We appreciate it. Sorry that was the hand that knocked you out of the main event, but you asked for analysis, and there you go, some blunt analysis from the poker coach, Joe McGowan, and from Dennis Phillips as well. Matt sent that email to DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com. If you've got a hand you want us to analyze, send it on in, and we'll get to it on a future episode of the Lumiere Place Final Table. Thank you very much, Joe. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, thanks, guys, and thanks, Matt, for sending that in. That was a good one.
All right, we've got Darvin Moon standing by coming up in just a couple of minutes here at the Lumiere Place Final Table. This portion of the show is brought to you by One Time Apparel. I'm wearing my One Time sweatshirt in here today. I got a One Time hat with me. Dennis is wearing some One Time Apparel as well. You should be wearing it when you sit around the poker table, whether it's a T-shirt or a polo shirt or a hoodie. You can get it from One Time Apparel and look good at the poker table and tell other players that you know what good poker apparel looks like. Go to the website onetimeapparel.com. See all the things they've got, both for men and for women. Organic or all cotton. Ringer t-shirts, scoop neck t-shirts, and hats too. Fitted hats, flexible hats, hats full of aces, etc. All available right there at that website, onetimeapparel.com. You can charge it via credit card, or you can use PayPal. And as always with all of our sponsors, you can use the link on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. Click on the sponsors section, and in there you will find one-time apparel. We're right back with Darvin Moon, the runner-up this year at the World Series of Poker main event, here on Five Night of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table, the only show in St. Louis with a poker millionaire. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host, Paul Harris, on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
Welcome back to the Final Table here at the Lumiere, where you can hear the chips falling right and left behind us back here. Guys, having some fun. Here with Paul Harris on this one, and we're welcoming a new guest to the show, perhaps the most famous logger in the world. This summer, on his first trip to Las Vegas, he worked his way through a field of over 6,000 players to become the chip leader of the World Series of Poker main event. Last month, he went back to Vegas to continue the run through the November 9 until Joe Cotta eliminated him in a historic heads-up match. Second place finish, he won $5.18 million. Not bad considering that he got there through a $130 satellite tournament in Wheeling, West Virginia. Now we're happy to welcome Darvin Moon to the final table. How you doing, Darvin?
I'm doing great. And you, Dennis?
I'm always doing good. Darvin has sort of been associated with me, and I'm proud to say. I mean, we both went through satellites. We're both kind of middle-aged, laid-back guys, and anybody that wants to compare me to Darvin, I got no problem with that.
And you both went to the final table as chip leaders.
There you go.
And
absolutely
walked away multimillionaires. So congratulations on that, Darvin.
Thank you.
Yeah. Go ahead.
It was great to be there, and if people compare me to you, Dennis, that's an honor, I feel, to be compared to you.
Thank you very much. But I think we both just kind of be ourselves, and we think we were both raised right, and, you know, we look upon this as some fun and being a good ambassador to the sport. So that's good.
Yep, that's the way I look at it. It's fun.
It is.
Darvin, I want to start off here with a question about the main event, and I heard this, and I don't know if it's true, and you probably are the only one who can answer it. Is it true that in the course of the 10 days of the main event, you put your chip stack at risk? You were all in 27 times. Is that even possibly true?
That's not true. I knocked 27 people out. But the only time my chip stack was all in against somebody with more chips than I had was the last hand I played.
Wow.
That's the only hand that I had all my chips in. And I'm glad it worked out that way because, but I had the chip lead over anybody else that I was all in against except that hand. I think one other hand earlier, I went in against, and I think he had me slightly covered, but he laid it down.
Ah, gotcha. Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you for clearing that up because I'd had a lot of people who had known that we were going to have you on the show today who were emailing who wanted to know about that, and they said, how could a guy possibly get that far putting his chips at risk that often? And it turns out you weren't. You were putting other people's chips at risk that often.
I never once said all in except against Antonio Esfariore and against Carter there at the end. And then, like I say, Saúl, everybody else went all in against me, and I just had to call.
Oh,
those are the only three times. Antonio, Saúl, and Cada there at the end. Is there any times I went all in?
Okay.
If you can be that way, which sometimes you have to have a good chip count and have it, that's excellent. That's the way to do it. You never want to have all your chips at risk unless you absolutely have to on it.
Right.
Hey, something that everybody's asked me all the time was about the stamina and having to play the long hours out there and playing day after day after day. Was there any time when you just kind of got frustrated or tired and wanted to say it's time just to go relax for a couple hours and, you know, I don't kick back, shall we say?
Did you get burned out?
Yeah, day 8 at lunchtime, I went to the room, took a shower, told my wife, I said, I know I'm guaranteed 352,000 or whatever. I said, I'm done. I can't go no farther. Took a shower, went to bed. She woke me up, time to go back down the plane. She said, it's your choice. You want to go or not? And I got dressed and went back down, and thank God I did. quite an afternoon.
I love it. I love it.
We had talked several times on the show about the difference between a guy in his 40s like you and a guy who at the time was still just 21 in Joe Cada, who, you know, he was able to do that 17-and-a-half-hour marathon and had no problem when it was over the next morning. Were you at any point during that long session of the final table, working your way down to heads up, when it was, you know, 9-2, were you at any time completely burnt out then while you were still playing, at a point where you can't get up and go take a shower?
No, I was fine there. It looked like I was burnt out and maybe asleep, but no, I was fine. I just tried to stay as relaxed as possible and just, I was fine there. I could have went another 4 or 5 hours. Matter of fact, I went out in the casino after it was over and played Texas Hold'em Bonus for 2 or 3 hours before I went to the room.
Oh, my God, he's just like you.
I went and played blackjack immediately afterwards.
Oh, my God. You guys are twins.
I headed to the tables. But, no, on the 9-2, I was fine there. The 6 days straight there in July wore me out. I was overwhelmed with all the attention and everything. I just didn't know what to expect there.
Well, I don't think anybody's going to make a mistake of thinking you're asleep at the table or something. I think you're more like a cobra that's kind of curled up there ready to strike or something. And about the time somebody gets lulled into it, you'll take him down, that's for sure. I've watched the way you play on that.
I was just sitting there pretty relaxed, waiting on something. But
Darvin, tell us a little bit about your game. Are you a guy who's really good at reading other players? Were you playing the players? And then later on, when you watched it on ESPN, did you say to yourself, "I knew that guy had that"?
Yeah, several hands. The only person I really didn't have a good read on was Jeff Shulman. I played with him 3 days in July, and every day when I wasn't in a hand, I'd try to figure out what he had, and I was wrong every time. I mean, he just had me. But against Phil Ivey, I felt he had a pair of jacks, pair of tens somewhere when he shoved all in first stack, but I only had, $5 million to call, and it was only me and him in the pot. I have to call with ace-queen, and I got lucky there. I mean, he naturally I had the wrong read on him when I called him. I got lucky. But, yeah, I can read people fairly well, I think.
I think he does a very good job of reading, actually, better than a lot of people gave him credit to until he got on that final table and some people saw the way he was doing and the way he was reading Joe Cotta and the rest of this. I think you got a lot of respect at that table for some of the moves you did. I hope you did. Because I did.
I just went there not playing heads up very often. Like I told him, I think I've played 3 times in the last 2 years heads up. Back here at home, we usually just chop everything, get down to 2 players and split it and take off.
That's a weakness of a lot of people.
I played heads up on my satellite, and the night before that I played a $30 tournament to win $700, and I took it out to Willing and won the rest. Yeah, but both those nights I played heads up. The $30 tournament, we played heads up for like an hour and 40 minutes. It was back and forth. But they said how Carter was supposed to be when he was so good at heads up. I just had my mind made up. I'm going out there and play wide open, and if he beats me, he beats me. If he don't, he don't.
Well, the funny thing is, on the first hand of heads up,
you
had queens on the button, and you just called. And Joe had a pair of nines and made a move, and you just called. In retrospect, do you think that if you had made a big move there and maybe shoved right there, that you could have really put a huge dent in his stack and things would have turned out completely differently?
Well, I could have, but I knew I got queens and he raises, so I think, you know, maybe he's got ace-jack, something like that. If an ace comes, I can lay it down. And ace, king, king's on the board at the end. I was betting him, getting 15 out of him each bet until the last bet. He checked, I checked back to him because I knew if he check raises me, I got to lay it down. So I felt, either way, I think he would have called an all-in pre-flop, but then maybe he wouldn't have because I limped and then come over the top a lot with aces, kings during the other part of the tournament. So I decided to play it a little different. And one hand put us even up pretty much
with
the way I played it. So I don't know. There's you can always look back and say, I should have done this and I should have done that. And if I look back and the only thing I would have done different than I'd done was the 7-8, I'd have went all in after the flop instead of after the turn.
He only had
50 million left.
Yeah. Correct.
That was the one where it was a 10-9 blank flop and another 10 came on the turn, and that's where
you
shoved?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I agree with you on that.
On the flop. Yeah.
But again, if that's the biggest mistake you made the whole time, that's not much of a mistake on it.
Right.
We all can look back and analyze it.
I feel that's the mistake I made, but, you know.
Darvin, if I'd been in your shoes, the biggest mistake I would have made all day was lying to my wife about the Queens.
No, that wasn't a mistake. Because I felt that the people backstage was listening on those mics and then sending stuff out to the coaches. So that was done intentionally. She'll tell you, before we come down there, that was the plan. Because I was mic'd when we went down to 9. And I just felt that there was some stuff being sent around. I don't trust nobody when I'm playing cards. And, after the thing was over and everything, I told, I was drawing dead. He had ace, king, of spades. Same as ace, queen. I mean, I got a two-outer. I had to hit a king that wasn't a spade to beat him. That don't bother me there. She knows. My wife knew what I was doing there. Matter of fact, I got everything, every step from day 1 to day 10 wrote in a book and had it all wrote out. How I play every day. And it worked pretty well.
Tell you something that we kind of glossed over earlier that impressed me, and I don't think maybe a lot of people caught that. You took the dinner break on day 8. You went upstairs. You took a shower, relaxed, and you fell asleep. I'm telling you, 9 poker players out of 10, there's no way in the world in that position with that many chips and in that important of a tournament could have just laid down and fall asleep. I thought I was the only one that could do that because that's what I used to do during dinner breaks. All right. Do you have a long-lost brother or something on this thing? Because this is getting ridiculous. Everything you bring up is things that I have done.
A lot of similarities there. Absolutely.
Being relaxed and able to do it, that's awesome.
Well, we've worked for a living our whole life. It gives you a whole different outlook on life than sitting at a poker table your whole life. I mean, I think that's why we're so similar. I mean, we've had to go out there and work a 40-hour week, or I work a 65- to 70-hour week every week. Back here at home. You probably did the same thing with your position in your company that you work for. That gives you a different outlook on, you know. Why get excited? And I always said it's a 10-day tournament. The only thing you can do in the first 9 days is lose it. So don't get excited.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
That's the way I looked at it. You know, I couldn't win that tournament in day 1 or day 9. Any day I could win it was the 10th day.
No. And you got to be there to win it.
That's right. Yeah.
Big difference on it.
Darvin, I've got another hand I want to ask you about. We're talking with Darvin Moon, the runner-up of this year's World Series of Poker main event here at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. There was a hand that you played a few days before the final table where you got into it heads-up with Billy Kopp, who at the time had a huge stack, as did you. And I think you both flopped a flush. You flopped the queen high, and he flopped the 5 high. And eventually all the money got in there on the river. I think it was you bet. He bet, and you raised, and then he shoved, and you pretty instantly called there. As I recall, the board was paired. I think there were a couple of deuces out there on the board. Paired on the turn, yeah. You made that call very, very quickly, or at least it seemed that way on TV. ESPN, of course, edits these things down dramatically. Can you walk us a little bit through that hand for some of our listeners who saw that on TV and are wondering what the heck was going on?
Well, we've got to go back about 4 or 5 big blinds before that when after we got rid of the guy that was sitting right beside of me was, I called him New York. I can't think of what his name was. But he got out, and then eventually moved Eric Buckman in there. But every time I was a big blind, Kopp raised me. And I just folded. And I kept watching him, and I could tell with this hand I had this, and whenever I fold it, or when I said call, the expression he gave me, I knew he had nothing. I knew he didn't have an ace. I knew he had, you know, bad cards. So when I flop that, I check, and he checks. The turn comes a deuce. Well, he could have deuce and a king or deuce and a six, I think, was the only two things he could, or deuce and a nine in his hand, or anything would have filled him up. So I know he don't have that, or feel sure. You know, I just knew he didn't have the ace of diamonds, and if you got me beat, you got me beat. But I would have bet the 800,000 that I was up to winning at that time that I had him beat. And I leaned back in my chair. That's the only time that I felt that my heart rate went way up. I leaned back in my chair because I thought I was going to pass out when he said all in. And but I just had a good read on him in that hand, and I don't understand why he's trying to bully the big stack. I mean, me and him were both the big stacks, and why he's trying to run over me, but it didn't work that time. Next time he might get me, but.
Well, they call it Kopp's meltdown, and believe me, everybody that comments on the hand comments about how poorly he played the hand. He tried to justify it a variety of different things, but see, there's where reading comes into play.
Yeah, he raised my big blind like four or five times in a row. The exact same, you know, of different bet strategies on him, but I felt 100% I had him, and I leaned back in my chair, took a deep breath, and said, "I call." And when I rolled my cards over, he was pretty upset.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. When you saw his card, you had to go, "Yes." That just had to be
unbelievable. I knew he was drawing dead then.
Yeah, absolutely.
I figured that the best he had was trips, and if he can hit, he hits. You know,
that'd be 10 outs on the river, so.
Yeah,
cool. But he did. Hey, I hear you had a pretty exciting weekend this last weekend.
Yeah,
New Orleans.
I was down to New Orleans for the New Orleans New England game. It was great. It was good Monday night football.
Considering you became the most famous Saints fan in the country thanks to ESPN's coverage of the World Series of Poker, did the Saints treat you nicely? Did they let you on the field? Did you get to go to the locker room? Did you get to meet some of the guys?
Yeah, I was on the field in the locker room. The guys were getting ready for game time. I didn't meet a whole lot of them. You know, I let them do their thing. They're, you know, it's right in the heat of the battle, and I have more respect for them than go up and say, "Hey, I'm," you know, it's let them get their stuff done. And then, but Archie Manning, I met him. Got my picture taken with him. That was pretty impressive that he, you know, come up and gave me time. It was great. I'm planning on going to the playoffs and the Super Bowl with them.
And
when I come back out in Vegas this coming weekend to play, I'll be wearing their hat again.
we're both going to be playing in Jennifer Tilly's has a charity tournament out there, and both of us are going to be involved in that. Darvin, a lot of people don't realize this. He's very into the charities, very into giving it back.
Well, wait a second. I thought that you were going to disappear back into the woods, that after the World Series of Poker, you would never be heard from again. You weren't going to be going to all these big events, et cetera.
No, this isn't a big event. This is a charity event. Right now, I'm cruising a piece of timber, and I'm standing up in the middle of 200 acres of nothing but trees.
I love
it. That's what I'm doing right now.
And you feel right at home, right?
Yes, I do feel at home.
You put me on a farm somewhere, and I'd feel right at home, too. That's excellent.
Yep, that's where I'm at. But, yeah, I'm not going to play a lot of the big events. I'm going to play a few, pick and choose the ones I want. And that's my plans. My wife kind of likes Vegas, and she wants – the main reason we're coming out is for me to play in that tournament, and she wants to go to Cher's show.
At Caesar's
and
Palace.
I'm going to take her to that, and I'm going to play a little cards.
Did you get to enjoy Vegas, considering you'd never been there before?
No. The night after the we played down to – I come in second, Todd come in first. The night after that, we went down to Fremont Street and then went to the Stratosphere for dinner. And that's the only places I've been besides the Rio. So this trip's going to be a vacation.
Well, I've got your room over at the Venetian where I'm staying. We'll hang around for a little bit, and we'll head over there to the charity event. It's going to be held at the Hard Rock. And we can just kind of relax for a couple of days. How's that sound?
Yep, that sounds great.
All right, very good on that. All right. Well, anyhow, folks, we were joined by Darvin Moon here, a new friend of mine, gentleman that also finished so high in the World Series of Poker, and you will hear more from Darvin Moon, be it at a Saints game, be it at a charity event, or back in the main event next year. Now, thanks so much, Darvin. I appreciate it very much.
Yep. Here. Thanks for having me.
All right. You take care now.
Darvin Moon with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris here at the Lumiere Plays Final Table on 5 million of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. And a reminder that we are also available online on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. You can go down there and download our podcast. This is our 45th show, which means you got 45 hours of the show that you can listen to in any order you want at any time you want. It's the Final Table on demand. Once again, the website is thechipleader.com.
45.
And this portion of the show is brought to you by Reactor Watch.
Yeah, one thing I forgot to mention when we were at the Pujols Family Foundation, again, Reactor Watch, great company, great people there. Jimmy came to the event. Jimmy donated a watch that was also one of the silent auction items there. Fabulous looking one. It was one of their specialty ones, specially made just for Albert, and they made an additional one, and they auctioned it off there. Tremendous looking watch. Everybody was just oohing and aahing at this thing. But I'm telling you, it may look great. It may be, you know, this fabulous looking watch with diamonds and everything on it, but it's the makings inside that make it a Reactor watch. The most durable watch around, the thing you just can't hardly destroy, survives bombing, survives whatever the heck you want to do with it. It is a sports watch, bar none. Let me tell you, if you want a watch and you want one for your lifetime, get a Reactor watch.
To find out more about Reactor, click the sponsors link on thechipleader.com, then click on Reactor Watch, and you get everything you need to know. This is 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
It's a winter wonderland at Lumiere Place this December 1st through the 24th. And while the winds may be howling outside, things are heating up with $125,000 in instant cash and prizes inside. It's as easy as playing the games you love, including exciting new slots and the city's best table games. Earn 100 points each day and win an instant prize. Limit one per player per day. Start playing December 1st at 8 a.m. and play every day through December 24th at 11:59 p.m. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
Before we go here today, say goodbye to Binion's Hotel in Las Vegas. It's Binion's Gambling Hall and Hotel, the original home of the World Series of Poker that Benny Binion started,
right,
and the whole Binion family owned it for all those years until they sold it to Harrah's 5 years ago. They are shutting down the hotel component of the business, according to a statement from the owners this week. They say the decision was made to keep the rest of the property operational, but they have been affected heavily by the economic downturn. The hotel rooms there no longer competitive, so they will have their legendary poker room, and they will have their casino, but there will be no hotel at Binion's anymore. Have you ever had a chance to play at Binion's?
Yes, I have. I've played there a couple of different times. They have a wall there that you can sign, their wall of fame or whatever, and I got to sign right with all the other legendary people that have played down there, and I thought that was an honor. So the names on there are unbelievable.
First time I went there was about 20 years ago, my first trip to Las Vegas, and of course I had to go and play in what was the old Binion's poker room, and it was the first place I ever played poker where they fed you for free. They had a poker players buffet for lunch and dinner every day. It was fantastic. It was also the smokiest poker room I've ever been in my life.
Yeah, I can believe that for sure.
It was amazing. All right, we've only got about a minute left here. You had something else you want to touch on?
Well, it's the growth of poker is going, it's unbelievable. There's a number of states now on the East Coast that are considering legalizing casinos. Foxwoods may run into a problem because Massachusetts is talking about as early as January, this coming up January in about 60 days.
Mm-hmm.
New Hampshire is looking at it. Maine is looking at it. Delaware is looking at it. The individual states are all looking at legalizing the gambling casinos and everything on that. And I'm telling you what, the PPA is the guys that have been doing this. Now we just need to do it on a federal basis.
That's the Poker Players Alliance that he's talking about. We're proud to have them as one of the sponsors of our show, and we keep you updated on all the legislative and congressional action. There was another hearing last week in Barney Frank's committee in Congress that the PPA was right on top of. John Pappas, who was on the Final Table with us last week, was there helping to lobby congressmen and women and try to get this legislation passed that would legislate and regulate online poker. They need the help of poker players like you. If you want to keep poker legal in all its forms, online, offline, brick-and-mortar casinos, and home games, go to theppa.org and become a member of the Poker Players Alliance. Again, that's theppa.org. We're all out of time. Next week, Mike Sexton, the newest member of the Poker Hall of Fame, will join us here at the final table. For Dennis Phillips and Darvin Moon and Joe the Poker Coach McGowan, I'm Paul Harris. Find us at thechipleader.com and next week here at the Lumiere Place Final Table.